Yeah, good morning. I'd like to call the Senate Finance Meeting Committee to order. Please silence all cell phones, 9:05 a.m. on Thursday, March 21st, 2024. I'm joined by Co-Chair Hoffman, Co-Chair Stedman, Senator Bishop, Senator Wilson, Senator Keel, Senator Merrick, and myself, Senator Olson. I'd like to acknowledge we have the Commissioner of Department of Public Safety with us this morning. We're hearing two bills on the agenda this morning. It's Senate Bill 151 and SCR 10. First one is Senate Bill 151, Murdered and Missing Indigenous Persons. This is the first hearing. I'd like to invite my aide, Almira Alcantara, up to the table. Please identify yourself for the record. Go ahead and describe the bill and continue. We'll have questions from there, and we'll have invited testimony after that. Ms. Alcantara, please.
For the record, Almira Alcantara, staff to Senator Olson. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the Senate Finance Committee, and thank you for hearing Senate Bill 151 today. The legislation before you today is the Senate State Affairs Committee substitute for Senate Bill 151, and if it pleases the chair, I can just speak to the main statutory changes in the bill rather than provide the sponsor statement and sectional analysis that are provided in your packets. Please. Thank you. Through the chair, the main statutory changes in the legislation go as following. It amends the law to require cultural training for police officers. There's also new language added requesting the Department of Public Safety to submit names and information to the National Missing and Unidentified Persons Systems Database, otherwise known as NAMIS. This bill also requires the Department of Public Safety to employ at least two investigators dedicated to missing and murdered Indigenous persons cases. This legislation establishes the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Persons Review Commission. This commission is housed within the Department of Public Safety. It consists of 9 members with diverse backgrounds and expertise, and the commission is tasked with reviewing unresolved MMIP cases from different regions of the state and creates cohesive guideline recommendations for the state and law enforcement agencies when it comes to addressing MMIP cases. This commission shall prepare and submit a report of its findings and recommendations to the legislature no later than January 1st, 2027, and this report will be made public through the Department of Public Safety. This legislation also requests that the Department of Public Safety collaborate with the commission on public outreach to provide knowledge not only to law enforcement, but to the public as well. This bill directs the Department of Public Safety to conduct a needs assessment to determine the resources needed for law enforcement to more effectively address MMIP cases, and this report of the needs assessment must be submitted to the legislature by January 1st, 2026. Lastly, the commission has a sunset date of January 1st, 2027, and if enacted, this act would take effect on January 1st, 2025. That concludes my prepared remarks for this bill. But I'm here to answer any questions. I also have invited testifiers and representatives from DPS as well.
Do we have any questions from members of the Finance Committee this morning for Ms. Alcantara? If not, thank you very much for your presentation. Invited testimony is the first one up is going to be Kendra Kloster, the co-director of Law and Policy, Alaska Native Women's Resource Center. Ms. Kloster, are you on, ma'am?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me okay?
Coming in loud and clear. Go ahead and identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Great. Thank you so much. This is Kendra Kloster. I'm the co-director of Law and Policy with the Alaska Native Women's Resource Center. I'm Quinget Raven Kiksadi, originally from Aquan Takuquan lands and also down in Wrangell, but live here on Dena'ina lands in Anchorage. I really appreciate you bringing Senate Bill 151 forward for missing and murdered Indigenous persons. Another hat that I wear is one of the members and organizers of the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women Two-Spirit Working Group, which consists of 5 Alaska Native nonprofits where we work on every front to ensure the safety of Native people and also all Alaskans are across the state as we work on MMIP and issues related to that around public safety and other things, domestic violence, sexual assault. This bill really came forward in many different ways as we talk with our communities, we talk with our families, we talk with DPS and local law enforcement, and the different things that are forward in this bill really came from these conversations and from our communities. The cultural training aspect is really important, as there's been a number of people that have come forward and just said that in order to enhance communication and working together collaboratively, that people need to really understand, you know, what our Alaska Native communities are about and how we really work together, because there's been a lot of communication barriers through the investigation processes. And so that's really an important piece of this bill. I've been also working with our MMIP investigators. They've been doing some really amazing work and have been really appreciative of all the good work that they're doing. And in this bill, as you can see, we are trying to solidify those positions. We've been working very closely with the commissioner, Commissioner Cockrell, who I do see online that he's in the room, and really have appreciated working with him and talking through all these different issues. And we've really seen the need and understood the need for these MMIP investigators, as Alaska has some of the highest rates of MMIP across the entire nation. And with murder being the third cause of Alaska Natives in the state, that's just so many alarming issues that we really need to address. One aspect of this bill I do want to say is we have 4 MMIP investigators at this time, and our bill currently just says it has 2. So I would ask and recommend that we increase the number from 2 investigators to 4 to ensure that we're maintaining the individuals that we have, and which is also included in the budget. So the commissioner can speak more to this, but he has stated, and I don't want to put words in his mouth, but he has stated previously that there is enough work for even up to 6. So I think it's really important that we're ensuring that we are keeping the 4 investigators. And lastly, I just want to say that one of the changes that happened in the last committee was mandatory reporting to NAMIS. I do want to request that the committee to see if we can look at that language and strengthen it a little bit more, as right now it just says you may report, which is something that DPS has been working on, appreciative of their efforts and making sure that they are putting into the federal missing persons database. But ensure that work continues, I think that language needs to be stronger, and there are some things that we have been working with the other body and put in that language as a little bit stronger, which I'm happy to send over to this committee to ensure that that work continues. But I will stop right there and just say, again, we're really appreciative of this bill. There's a lot of good work that has gone into it. It's really important for us to move this forward, and I'm available for any questions.
Do we have any questions by members of the committee for Ms. Foster? Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. She might be the one to answer this question, or the following presenter or somebody, but it'd be interesting to know the geographical dispersion of the amount of missing women around the state, because the impression I get it is a statewide issue. And I know there's some ladies in Southeast that are missing, but if we had any of that type of data, I think it would be helpful.
Ms. Kloster.
Yes, Senator Stedman, through the chair. We do have some of the data, and I might send it over to Charlene Upuck, who's actually sitting next to me, who is our data guru. But she's the executive director of Data for Indigenous Justice, and she does home the database for missing, murdered Indigenous people, where she can speak more to that. But yes, it is a statewide issue. We have a number of people that are missing all across the state. And so I can hand it over to her, but it's definitely in one of the reports around the Urban Indian Health Institute. They did put out some data where, you know, Anchorage was in the top 5 and the entire state was in the top 5 for MMIP cases.
Okay. Before we hear from Dr. Upland, we have any other questions from members of the committee for Ms. Kloster? I do have a question. Can you just touch on the urgency and the concern that has come out because of this bill that brought it forward from your perspective?
Yes, Senator Olson. As mentioned, I work with the MMIWG2S Alaska Working Group. And so I and people and within our working group, partners and organizations, tribes who work on this, I don't want to speak for them, but we do have a lot of conversations. And I, on a very unfortunately regular basis, and a number of the people I work with are getting calls from families about people that are going missing, that have been murdered, and they're asking for help. And we, as since we started collecting the information and the data, which really came out of a grassroots effort, those numbers have continued to increase. And we've seen in a number of reports, as I mentioned, the Urban Indian Health Institute and other reports, where Alaska is ranking in the highest rates in the nation for missing and murdered Indigenous people. If you follow any of our Facebook pages or anything like that, we continue to share people that have gone missing, and it's just at such high, staggering rates, and it really needs to be addressed now. And I just can't express the urgency and the families that need this. We need to ensure that the cold cases are being processed so we can bring closure to families, and those folks that are doing the harm to people are brought to justice and put in jail. And in addition to that is making sure that these numbers are going down. I'm just heartbroken over the number of people I talk to on a regular basis. Where this is just happening and affecting our families all across the state. And so this just, it's urgent. It really needs to be done. And we're seeing, as I do this work more, I'm seeing the urgency even more and really hearing these stories. So again, I appreciate your time and listening to this. And if anyone has, you know, wants to hear more information. I know we did a fly and I met with many of you, a number of the folks there, and shared a lot of the statistics and information. But it really is an urgent matter that we need to address now.
Ms. Clauser, thank you very much for touching on that. As members agonize over what's going on, it's certainly one of those things we want to try and alleviate that stress and strain that goes on. So thank you very much being the person that's the co-director of the law and policy area. Our next identified testimony is Dr. Charlene Uppuk, executive director of the Data of Indigenous Justice. Dr. Uppuk, would you go ahead and identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony?
Yes, thank you so much. This is Dr. Charlene Uppuk, and I wear concurrent hats. I'm the executive director at Data for Indigenous Justice, and I'm a co-director at Native Movement for Gender Justice and Healing. Thank you for having us today and holding this hearing. I wear many hats, but you know what really led me to being able to be here today is I'm a story keeper. Excuse me. I'm a story keeper that has been listening to our families and communities for many years, sharing their stories of their loved ones going missing and murdered. And that led to the tracking of data and information that was so much needed to get us here, because as we've learned through the last years, there wasn't the data infrastructure that we could point to and pull and see what was really happening. And so that has led to us getting a better grasp of knowing what's happening here in Alaska. And Kendra mentioned the Urban Indian Health Institute report. Data for Indigenous Justice put out a report in 2021 that at the time had 229 cases of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls here in the state of Alaska. And today, as we continue to steward and find that information, we have over 1,000 cases now. And we also see with the advocacy, their data and how important it is, DPS has been collaborating with other agencies to put out their quarterly report for missing persons as well. And that has really also like shown the public that we're tracking and we care and that this is being worked on. And hopefully also, again, right, having it be useful for law enforcement to get a grasp on what resources are needed. And so one of the things that we also mentioned, again, there's currently 4 investigators, and they have said, you know, we have enough work for a lifetime. And they've been working on the cases that have already, the cold cases, the cases that have already passed. And yet we are continuing this, and it's happening lifetime, right? This is a crisis that is urgent and continues to happen. And those investigators are, you know, keeping busy with work for a lifetime only on the ones that are already passed in cold cases. So with that, I just want to also echo the sentiments to increasing and strengthening the language to at least 4 investigators. Because again, we're dealing with not only what has happened in the past, but this ongoing issue. Just yesterday, you know, a family reached out and they're asking for advocacy around a homicide. So I'm just sharing that as an emphasis again, that this is something we continue to deal with lifetime, and there's so much more work to do to right the injustices of the past. Kendra also mentioned that we came to this bill with a lot of partnership. You know, we flew down with many of our partners and met with a lot of the representatives to educate and to share about what's been going on. And so the pieces and the components of this bill have been developed in close partnership with our relationship building with DPS, with working with different state folks, and from listening from the families. And so we've been really bridging, you know, what's happening on the ground with the agencies to arrive at this point of knowing that we need everyone to come together, that we need that committee with a diverse representation on that board so that everyone's perspectives are being heard and that we come together in a collaborative way as we have been doing over the years to get to this bill, which is just a starting point of what we need. We know that there's so much more that needs to be done at public safety, but this is the opportunity to pass something, an equitable measure that's going to address public safety here in Alaska, not just for Alaska Native people, but as we improve public safety for us, we know that it's going to help the lives of all Alaskans. And I just want to take one moment to speak to, again, the specificity of strengthening language on having mandatory reporting. So we're really grateful that DPS and some agencies are currently putting data into the federal database. And they're doing that, again, of course, like on their will. But I do want to emphasize that's important to have that mandatory reporting go forward so that as needs for data infrastructure come up. You know, when I started having these conversations around data and asking law enforcement what that looked like, some of them told me that their databases are archaic, you know, and so we really need that support for law enforcement to have also that language thinking forward so that they're supported in the future to keep doing the good work that they're already doing. With that, I know I've said a lot, but I'm happy to also answer any questions. But appreciate everyone coming together on this. And again, this has come with a lot of hard work from families and communities that have been holding and carrying this work for so long. And we're thankful to see the state taking some initiative and working together on this. Kleana.
We have a question from Senator Bishop, Dr. Apple.
Doctor, could you, I had trouble hearing your last couple of comments there, and I think I heard you say you said the word archaic. Was that had something to do with the data system that the department has? Is that what? Could you repeat that,
Dr. Apple, please?
Yeah. So a few years ago, as we started to identify the needs for data, and we were asking about collection and reporting. Some of the conversations that came up were saying that some of the challenges for having this information readily available was we have some of our data systems are archaic. That was literally from someone in law enforcement. And so we know that they need long-term support for data infrastructure if we're going to continue knowing what this issue looks like and to address, like, if they're doing a great job and some of these numbers start to change, that's awesome. And we really want to also represent the good work that law enforcement is doing. And so having language that says mandatory reporting not only supports what's already being done, but it builds a long-term infrastructure for future data systems when those resources are needed for law enforcement.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions from members of the committee for Dr. Apple? Dr. Epic, I'd like to ask you a question as to whether what your thoughts are on the cooperation that's going on between you and the the Department of Law, which is the prosecutors, and the Department of Public Safety?
Yeah, those are relationships we reached out to different folks over the years. We're still building those relationships, but I think that everyone is aware of the issue that's happening and that our call is that we come together and strengthen our partnerships. And one of the things that I'm really proud of happening here in Alaska is our ability to come together on shared values and knowing that this is the right thing to do, that public safety is an important matter to all sectors. And so those are still definitely being in development of relationship, but I have no doubt that we're able to do that and come together on this issue.
Thank you very much for that. Any further questions from members of the committee for Dr. Epple? If not, thank you very much for coming out this morning.
Koyana.
Next one up is going to be Lisa Perrington, legislative liaison from the Department of Public Safety, addressing the fiscal note. Please come up, identify yourself for the record, and go ahead and comment on the fiscal note, please.
Thank you, Chair Olson. For the record, Lisa Perrington. Lisa Perrington with the Department of Public Safety, the acting legislative liaison for the department and the division director for the Division of Statewide Services with the department. The fiscal note that we have for this bill is multi-pronged. One of them, with this bill, it requires a missing person commission, and to help manage that commission, to make sure that commission is supported and help to carry out the mission and the goals of that commission, will be a program coordinator to help coordinate meetings, travel schedules, and any other administrative work that needs to be done, and any other project management that needs to be done for this commission. And so that is a year one cost, which is slightly higher for that position, as we set up to establish the position, which is going to be for computers, workstations, and all. And then those costs will slightly decrease in years FY26 forward for the position. Also in year one, there is a cost for the report that is required for the needs assessment as part of this bill. And that's something the department is actually looking forward to for that. We would look to contract that work out because it is going to be fairly comprehensive to develop a project plan, stakeholder engagement, community outreach, traveling, scheduling, certainly doing periodic reports for invoicing, actually managing the meetings. And most importantly is going to be the final report that will certainly be reported back to the body, to the legislature. But it's also, we're looking to also include an implementation plan. So it's one thing to create the report, to identify what the needs are from the communities, and with over, you know, with 229 federally recognized tribes in the state, this is going to be a fairly large outreach to engage, as you've heard from the invited testimony. There's a lot of work to do that outreach to get that input from the community members across the state and to complete the plan, but to have an implementation. What are we going to do once we've identified what those needs are, and to have that implementation plan forward so that this could be a pathway not only to address the MMIP issue specifically, but to address, you know, continued and ongoing coordination and collaboration among all three levels of government, from the state, local, certainly the tribal, and our federal partners as well. So how we can make things better and improve public safety statewide. So that's what that contractor costs are for year one. We estimated it about $400,000 to go out for bid for that contractor work. The other item in here is what the funding that is included in the governor's FY 2025 budget, which is the $350,000. This bill currently requires the two MMIP investigators, as you've heard testifying, we have four. This is to help, we're funded for two, we have four, so this is to help fully fund the two positions as required in this bill.
Any questions of Senator Bishop?
Thank you. In section one, this added this new section, completing cultural training. Except, is that something that you've already do, or you're going to do? Do you already have it in the can? Do you have to develop it? And I didn't, I might have missed it, but I didn't see that. Is it, it's a zero cost to do this?
Ms. Perrington.
Through the chair to Senator Bishop, a great question. That is certainly something that we looked at as well. The department through the academy does do cultural awareness training, not necessarily that may not meet the specific needs for this, for having I may be confusing the bill and the other body, but to have an Indigenous person coordinator for that. But after reviewing internally, that is something the department believes that they could absorb the cost to get that cultural awareness training. And I will certainly defer to the commissioner to address any more specific questions on that.
Sure. Follow-up, Senator Stitt?
I'll wait for the commissioner.
Any further questions by members of the committee? I guess one of the questions I have for you is that as you look at roughly $500,000, and we just heard from the previous testifier that there started out with 229 cases and now it's over 1,000. Is that enough money to go ahead and fully fund this effort that's going forward?
To the chair, Senator Olson, the cost, I think, with having the additional position to help coordinate the group that will comprise the Missing Persons Commission, and so it would be the many hands make light of work. So we would certainly want to leverage the members that are part of that commission to help with these outreach efforts. And so that's why we wanted this position to kind of help support the work of that commission. And then for the contractor, the contract work is just 1 year to I believe is our timeline to complete the report. The implementation of that report may be where there may be some additional costs in the future, depending on what the outcome from that report is.
Okay, and the sunset date of January 1st, 2027, is that going to be adequate?
To the chair, that will certainly be to the will of the legislature with the sunset date. That would be a heavy lift to try and get all of this work done. I don't know that the full implementation may not be able to be completed, and that may be something for consideration for a possible extension. And that's where you'll see the position we did list out beyond that sunset date, because we anticipated that this would be something that the body may consider extending that date.
Okay. Any further questions by members of the committee for Ms. Farrington? If not, thank you very much for coming out this morning. Next, we'd like to have Commissioner Cockrell, Colonel for the Department of Public Safety. Please come on up and give us your comments, please. And then thank you very much for your efforts of supporting legislation like this and supporting the families that are so much affected with the agony that goes along with people that were there one day and gone the next.
To the chair, Senator Olson, thank you for those comments, and thank you for allowing me to testify today. This is very important to me, and it's very important to our department. And I do see us making some huge strides forward. I see huge amount of progress, and I'm always nervous when I testify at the Senate. I don't know why. So I think what I'll do is, if it's okay with you, just kind of go from the start, the synopsis of what the department's doing, and then if we have any questions, feel free to answer questions.
Yes,
I'll try to make
well
those.
Well aware we have lots of time, and so there's no rush, no need to be nervous.
All right. I know you guys' time is valuable. But essentially, I came on board again about 3 years ago when the MMIP issues were starting to come to forefront in Alaska, even though it was occurring in the lower 48, and I know because I got a daughter in Montana, and I knew that we were engaged to a certain extent with the federal government and going to the meetings and stuff, but we weren't really doing what I thought was anything meaningful other than going to meetings. So early on, I thought, well, one of the things we need to do is we need to get an investigator, which I hired fairly quickly. The governor's office supported it. However, I didn't realize the breadth or the scope of the issue. And that investigator shortly got burned out and ended up resigning after about 6 months and actually making progress. So from there, I said, well, one's not going to work. And the federal government paid for the first one that we had. So I tried two. Again, two was not working. So then I jumped from two to four, and part of that was the funding that you gave us last year. I was able to hire four. And I was, I was taking retired Alaska State Troopers or Police Department and bringing them in as long-term, non-perm investigators. That way they could totally focus on one issue and that's MMIP issues. They're not diverted to any other investigations or anything else the department does. I kind of segregated them. They're kind of they kind of just do their own thing. I get briefed on them once a month, and they're under the curtilage of the Alaska Borough investigation, which gives them all the tools and additional investigative tools, but they're not really under their chain of command. They're basically under my chain of command to ensure that they don't get caught up in other investigations or within our bureaucracy. So currently we have four MMIP investigators. We're currently working six cold cases in four regions of the state, we're working on one in Southeast Alaska. We have taken one case from another agency, which you probably saw in the newspaper, from the Kotzebue Police Department, reported as a request to look at one of their cases. We get requests from family members. We get requests from other police departments to investigate what I'll call cold case MMIP or murder indigenous persons. So like I hate to get in front of my skis, but we could keep additional. I'm not asking for additional investigators. I think four right now is where we need to be. But I think as this process goes, we could come back and ask for a couple more. But right now, I think this is something that we can manage as a department. They're doing what I would say very tedious work with a lot of emotions, and they're all dedicated to this issue. This is the one issue that they have. So from there, I'm trying to think of where we want to go. We're also providing quarterly, like Ms. Apik said, we're a report of all missing persons in Alaska. We do this quarterly. We publish it. We have now included the Anchorage Police Department, the Fairbanks Police Department, the Soldotna Police Department, and the Kenai Police Department. So we're gathering all the information for we don't lose anybody in the process between all the other departments. We are submitting. You've heard NAMIS a couple times. It means the National Missing and Unidentified Person System. It's a federal database that covers the whole United States on missing persons. We are actually putting them in NAMIS now. We wait for 60 days because NAMIS is more of a long-term missing person versus a short-term missing person. Immediately when a person is missing in the state of Alaska, it goes into our missing person clearinghouse, which is Department of Public Safety manages for all police departments around the state. And we also get pinged at 30 days if that person still is showing up missing, for we can ensure that we're following through, or that agency that submitted that information is following through. Once we get to 60 days, we also, it continues to stay in our missing persons clearinghouse, but it also, we also enter into NAMIS. And any person, a family member, can enter it into NAMIS too. They don't have to wait for our department to do it, but the federal government or the people that run NAMIS will contact the department and say, is this really happening? Is this person really missing? To ensure that there's a quality control between our state and the federal system, if that makes sense. So we published that, and we can provide you a copy of our missing persons database that we run quarterly. We also, for each person that's on it, we designate if it was an environmental person loss, like if a boat sank, that would be environmental, or if a plane crash, we couldn't find them. Not suspicious. Suspicious means that we think there was circumstances that we believe that there could have been a homicide or foul play, and the department will interview or will investigate that. And then there's some that we just don't know about. They might wander off into the tundra and we just don't find them. So that would be unknown. I will say the administration this next fiscal year 25 has put in full funding for our four investigators. I think that's a huge step forward. We've also asked and received $250,000 for public outreach, because there's a lot. We want to get kind of a media campaign of what you do if your person goes missing. There's that, you know, in the lower 48, you'll watch a TV police, so you can't report a missing person for 48 hours, 24 hours, whatever happens to be in that state. We don't have that provision in Alaska. Alaska, you can report it any time. And we're telling people, if your person is missing, let us know right away, whether it's our police department, the Anchorage Police Department, whatever jurisdiction they're in. Don't wait. The time is always a ticking, and time is against us. So the sooner we get the information, the better, the more likelihood we'll find that person. The better information we get, the more likelihood we're going to find that person, either alive or potentially dead. So we're excited about the outreach. I will say that we were talking about the report, I think you guys, that Lisa talked about, and I see it. I know it's inexpensive because I looked at it too and thought, you know, this is a lot of money. But this report with all the information that they want to gather and outreach with the tribes and stuff, it could be something that we can utilize for years to come. It could set the tone of how the state of Alaska, the Department of Public Safety, how we interface with our tribes in this state. We do now have two tribal liaisons that are very active within our department, which we've never had before. They're following up on cases. We also have our victim navigators. They're essentially anybody that, if we're a victim I'll call it a felony level crime, we have a navigator assigned to that victim. That way we can keep in touch with that victim. We've got one in Bethel. We're getting one hired up in the Nome-Kotzebue region, and then Mathew Valley. We're trying to get one for Southeast and Fairbanks and the Peninsula. Again, what happens in the criminal justice system is our victims get forgotten, especially if the cases go on and on and on. And then we end up losing, especially in rural Alaska, we lose that victim. And then a lot of times their cases don't get heard and the offenders don't get held accountable for the actions that they've done. So we've had it up and going for 6 months. We've had over 900 contacts with our victims in just nine months. And that just shows you how much that we're utilizing them. So as a department, I think we're coming a long ways, especially when it comes to how we interact with our tribes, because there was a time we didn't do a very good job, and we've paid for that. And I see a cultural shift even within our department, because we are highlighting the importance of our Native people, our Indigenous people, and our tribes. And I want to keep going in that direction. Had lots of support from Kendra's group and other groups on the directions we're going. I've said a lot, and there's so much I could talk about, but I think this is kind of the high points. I do support, I've supported the bill in the House, and I support the bill in the Senate, which I did on the first reading. And we have to, as a state, we have to do a better job of providing professional police services in rural areas of the state that don't have any. As simple as that.
Senator Stedman has a question.
Yeah, the termination date of this is 2027, seems short. So can we get the logic why it's there and not, say, 2030, or which is only 6 years out?
Mr. Cockrell.
Through the chair, I don't know that I had any input on that. I would suggest, based on what we want to do as a department, what I personally want to do, I would like to see it pushed out, because I don't want anything rushed. We want it done right, and I think if we compress the time too much, I think we won't get the information that we need.
Sure. Ms. Alcantara, do you have a comment on why the legislation report assessment could be submitted by the first day of January 2026?
For the record, Almri Alcantara, staff to Senator Olson. Just so I'm understanding the question correctly, we're looking at the sunset date for the commission, or are we looking specifically at the report date for DPS for their needs assessment?
Senator Stedman?
The sunset date on the commission.
Which is January 1st, 2027. Was that put together by the bill sponsor, or in cooperation with other entities that are out there concerned with the same subject?
Yeah, for the record, Almri Alcantara, staff to Senator Olson. That date was set by the sponsor. The reason for that date, I think, is really just to determine not necessarily the efficiency of the commission at that time, but the need for the commission. If we're looking at the bill makeup, there is the report that comes from DPS, and that is at January 1st, 2027. They'll look at findings or recommendations that can be for policy recommendations, that can be recommendations to law enforcement agencies. on the next steps forward. If they see fit to have the commission, I'll leave that to the will of the legislature to decide at that time. But really, it was just setting a date so that we could reassess at that time where we need to go from there.
It certainly was a policy call that was a legislative starting point for consideration. So that's the reason for it, Senator Stedman.
That is correct.
Any further questions, Senator Bishop?
Thank you. I have a couple for the commissioner.
Please.
Commissioner, can you just educate me, because this is the world that you live in, and how your department interfaces now with affiliate agencies to help execute this mission, and how will this bill strengthen this, you know, how will this bill strengthen those relationships and going forward?
Commissioner Cockrell.
To the chair, Senator Bishop, you know, that's a really good question. I would say law enforcement in general in Alaska is a big family. We work close together with the Fairbanks Police Department. We certainly got shared assets there. They're members of our SWAT team, same as the North Pole Police Department. I can look on, because I live on the Kenai Peninsula, the partnerships this department has with Soldotna and Kenai and Homer and Seward. I would say even with our federal partners, we're all task force, especially in the drug reign of the world right now, especially with the increases of drugs that are coming into Alaska, specifically cocaine, heroin, and meth. I guess the bottom line is I feel very comfortable where our department is in interfacing with local law enforcement agencies around the state, including the Mattsu Valley. I was out on a ride along or patrol with them, and we were chasing this guy through the woods in knee-deep snow, and the Wausau Police Department showed up with their drone, and within an hour, we got this guy captured and safely arrested and taken back to jail. So there is huge amount of there has to be in this state. We have a state of about 750,000 people, and we have on average 1,300 certified police officers in the state, which any other state you wouldn't, especially with the distances that we have, we'd probably have twice as much as we got currently have.
Thank you. Want follow-up?
Follow-up, Senator Bishop.
In Section 1, you know, we talked, I spoke to it earlier, how this cultural training, you know, is going to be provided, and I'm assuming it's going to be provided at the academy, or how are you going to implement this cultural training?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop. Basically, currently, we do provide cultural training at the academy. I call it more as high level. And but what I want to do with the, I'll call it the stepped up cultural training, I want to do it in our in-services. We provide a trooper's in-service every year, because at the academy, it's, you know, it's go, go, go. And there's just so much that we're inputting so much information to our troopers, our municipal police officers. I just don't think they completely grasp it. Plus, if you look, not only at our department, other departments, we're bringing in a lot of people that have never lived in Alaska. And so they really don't know what Alaska is, what our culture is, especially when we go into rural areas of the state. So my hope for our department is once we get what I would say an acceptable real cultural training with our partners, that we'll do it in service, and it won't be one of our instructors. It'll be somebody that is an expert in Alaska issues.
Thank you for that, Commissioner.
Any further questions by members of the committee for Commissioner Cockrell? Commissioner Cockrell, I want to thank you for paying special attention to these cases. There are certainly so many out there And certainly want to thank you and your family for the commitment to public safety here in the state of Alaska. I know it precedes you by a generation or two, and so with that, I want to thank you for that. Thank you very much for coming out this morning.
Thank you very much for hearing me. Thank you.
Any final comments, Ms. Alcantara, before we set this bill aside?
For the record, Omri Alcantara, Staff to Senator Olson. No further comments at this time, but again, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for hearing the bill today. I appreciate it.
Okay. We want to set up an amendment deadline for next Monday, March 25th at noon. We'll set this bill aside, taking at ease. wouldn't have the Senate Finance Committee come back to order. The next consideration up is Senate Concurrent Resolution 10, Seafood Industry Task Force by the Finance Committee. We heard this resolution first on March 7th and took public testimony. We've set an amendment deadline. Amendments have been incorporated into the committee substitute. We have a motion. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the Senate Finance Committee adopt committee substitute for Senate Concurrent Resolution 10 Finance, Work Order 33LS1469/B, as in Bettles, as a working document.
And I'll object for discussion. Ken Alper will come on up and explain the changes. Mr. Alper, please identify yourself for the record and go ahead and with your explanation of the changes that are in front of us.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members of the Finance Committee. For the record, my name is Ken Alper, staff to Senator Olson and the Finance Committee. You have before you the B. Bettles version of SCR 10. There are a few changes, some of them are more stylistic and clarity-wise that I'm not going to go into in detail. The first primary change in the whereas section of the resolution, there were words put in talking about specific economic current problems of the industry, increased cost of operation, high interest rates, and the fact that numerous processing facilities in Alaska are either for sale, closing, or intending to be shut down for some or all of the 2024 season. A second change, Mr. Chairman, if you look, when we get to the resolved portion of the bill on the second page, there's a list of seven items, and in the original version, there's an eighth resolved in the current version that was added to look at this task force, a policy for limited entry permit buyback proposals, which may be more of them forthcoming in the years to come. Third change, Mr. Chairman, is probably the most comprehensive change. The structure of the task force itself has been expanded. There are now 13 voting members. There were only seven in the original version of the resolution. In addition to the four members of the legislature, which has stayed the same, there are now specifically three representatives of the seafood processing sector, two of whom should represent larger companies with two or more shoreside facilities in multiple communities, and one of whom should be a smaller processor with a single shoreside plant. There should also be seats for three commercial harvesters, one of whom would be in the salmon harvesting business, one with whitefish, and one in shellfish. And then finally, three representatives of fishing-dependent communities, one from rural and western Alaska, one from a Gulf of Alaska community, and one from southeast. In addition, Mr. Chairman, to those nine plus the four legislators or 13 voting members, there would be three non-voting ex officio members of the commission. Those would be the three commissioners of Commerce, Community Economic Development, Fish and Game, and the Department of Revenue or their designees. So 16 people totally. Finally, Mr. Chairman, there was another change that just clarified that the appointees, that the members of the task force really should be looking objectively at the statewide seafood industry and not be there to represent their particular region or fishery that they were personally involved in. And that, Mr. Chairman, are the changes in the committee substitute.
Do we have any questions for Mr. Alpers by members of the committee? Remind me of the reason, Mr. Alper, why the number changed so drastically, and are all these members voting members?
Mr. Chairman, thank you for the question. The bulk of the structural rewrite came from the Senate President's office. They were actively involved in helping design the original bill and brought it to the Finance Committee for your consideration and introduction. I believe Mr. Lampkin is here who might be able to speak in greater detail than me regarding his outreach to the processing industry and the fisheries in general to get input as to how best to structure this organization, this commission. It's largely modeled on a similar bill and a similar commission that existed about 20 years ago. Your answer regarding voting, the 13 members, meaning the nine industry folks plus the four legislators, would be voting. The three administration members would be ex officio non-voting.
Okay. I just want to make sure that the bills or the resolution sponsor was in favor of what was going on. It sounded like he was a key element for making those changes.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I would recommend you ask that question of Mr. Lampkin of the President's office.
Okay. Any further question by Mr. Alper, for Mr. Alper by members of the committee? I'll go ahead and remove my objection. Version B is now before us. Mr. Lampkin, please come on up, identify yourself for the record, and go ahead with your explanation, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens, been deployed to assist with this project. The CS before you is a reflection of some input from the stakeholders. It was originally crafted very narrowly with the expectation that there'd be great interest in participating in this project. This draft before you does a few things. First, for optics, to help or at least attempt to bring a better balanced representation as the folks involved in this. That the legislature doesn't telegraph explicitly that there might be favoritism by naming a particular organization as we approach this project, nor potentially set it up for potential biased outcomes. It preserves some minimum legislative buy-in. Currently, there being just four legislative members, but meanwhile, trying to also consider that if we let it get too big, then it's cumbersome and it makes it logistically difficult to complete the project in a timely manner. This may not be a perfect model quite yet, but I would argue that we're getting closer. I'd also like to remind those listening that even though you organization may not be named on the task force as a member, it should not be assumed that they'll be excluded from the project. I expect that there'll be quite a lot of subcommittees set up that would make this as inclusive as possible. Otherwise, generally, I'd say Senator Stevens and leadership would be generally supportive of what we're attempting to do here.
Do we have any questions from members of the committee for Mr. Lampkin? Can you just address the idea that the bigger the group, as we've seen within even the legislature, the bigger the group, the more cumbersome it becomes, and it's harder to come to a consensus where you have a clear direction you want to go in to accomplish the reasons that we put up this resolution?
Mr. Chairman, I can only speak from anecdotally from my own experience, having organized and worked on a number of task forces over the years, particularly with Senator Stevens. The larger the task force, the more work it is to come to consensus, and this project is certainly about consensus building.
For sure. Any further questions by members of the committee? Thank you very much for coming up this morning, Mr. Lampkin. With that, we'll go ahead and set this bill aside, set this resolution aside. This concludes this morning's agenda. The next hearing will be tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. And we'll get an update on the forthcoming labor contracts that are going on from the Department of Administration and the Department of Law. There's no other business. Let me take it at ease. There's no other business to come before the committee. We're adjourned at 10 o'clock.